All right. So a couple of weeks ago, we had Scott Manning on from Vintage Brewing in Madison, Wisconsin. And just to give some perspective, to go back to that one for a little bit, they started as a restaurant in 2002. They started brewing in 2010. So you're looking at a place that's had 9 years as a brewery and 17 years in the hospitality industry. They've got three locations in Madison, one in Sauk City. So, you know, years and years of experience here. So that's in James's backyard. I'm flying solo tonight. James is not here. He's off doing some other things. And now we're in my backyard. We're in Newtown, Connecticut. And I'm here with Ryan Broderick and Frank Lockwood from Reverie Brewing, who have been open for 8 weeks. 8 weeks right now. So we're going to look at the complete opposite perspective of brand new and a brewery that's just gotten started. It's been in the works for years. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into getting to that opening day, and we're going to talk about that. But you've got a much different environment in terms of the types of breweries and the volume of breweries that are in this part of the country versus what you've got out in the Wisconsin area. And you've got some great experiences from these two guys on what has happened since they've started their process and opened their doors 8 short weeks ago. So welcome, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So to start out, tell us a little bit why Reverie, first of all. Love the name. Would like to hear a little bit about that and how you two met, got together, and how this all came about.
Well, I'll start with how we met because Frank can kind of take the hand up there for the name. I had kind of written the business plan about 2 years ago. I was working in finance, had a love for craft beer, had some free time on my hands, and just kind of wrote a business plan, did a little bit about like demographics in Newtown, and had always kind of thought in the back of my mind that it was never going to happen and it would be nice. I just loved craft beer. I loved the idea of working for myself. So I had the business plan for, 6 months to a year and had started talking to some people about it, but I was just a very, very, very amateur home brewer who just loved to drink beer and liked to talk to people and the environment of craft breweries and the social aspect of trying things out with friends and people who like the same things as you. And I was talking to a friend that I went to college with who actually grew up with Frank in their hometown of Old Saybrook. And he's like, you have to meet Frank. Called him. We kind of hit it off the first time we met on the phone. And we were both at a point in our lives, just both newly married, but no kids at the time. And it was, his brewing expertise and background and the business plan that I had. And we just kind of said, screw it. Let's take a chance. And that's kind of how the genesis. It was just a friend of a friend who kind of set this whole thing off.
Yeah. And to tee into that, so the name really comes from that, right? So it was Ryan's dream to own and work and kind of be at a brewery for most of his daytime and have that career in that. And it was also my dream to be brewing beer as a daytime job. So we went back and forth on some names for a while, but we just kind of came upon Reverie organically and thinking of some ideas. And the name itself means to be quietly lost in one's thought pleasantly in a daydream. So it worked really well for what we wanted to do with our lives and why we wanted to open a brewery. And it also allows me a lot of creative freedom with the beers that we make because a lot of the inspiration for the different beers that we do make are inspired by a daydream or a dream itself or pining for something, So it was a really good name for what we're trying to do.
And this is going to be really bad podcasting here, but we have a giant mural on a garage door that says "Don't quit your daydream," and that's kind of a play, obviously, off "Don't quit your day job." And that's exactly what I have been lucky enough to do. Is my dream was to own my own business and own a brewery, and that's my Reverie was quitting work and doing this. So
nice, very nice. So you had a business plan. You got together and got in. So in these first 8 weeks, you had a plan. You opened the doors. Thought, okay, here we go. Can you tell us anything about things that went smoothly versus things that went completely differently than how you expected? It may not be a thing that went badly, but just what didn't go according to plan? Anything probably is the answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably everything and anything. I think I probably had an emotional breakdown about 15 times.
Yeah, I would say one of the, you know, talking about opening a brewery is not, you know, it's a lot of fun and we're doing this because it's great, but there's certainly those months leading up are about as stressful as they ever were in my, you know, professional career before this. Just, you know, it's the weight of 2 years of planning all kind of coming to a head, getting to, you know, an opening weekend. I think we pulled it off pretty good. We've had a really smooth, I think, operation in the front of house for the first 2 months that we've been open. I think Frank's made, you know, 11 awesome beers so far, actually 12 now. We just put one on last week for the first time. So yeah, I think maybe not going as planned. I certainly, you know, in your daydream that you have doing this at your desk job 2 years ago, it's all like, oh, I'm going to be owning a brewery. Everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be awesome. The stress aspect and just, you know, you own your own business now. You can't, like, you don't just leave it at five, or whatever time you go home, you know, you don't just leave it at the office, so to speak. So it's something that, at least for me, running more of the finance side of the business is something that legitimately I think about every day, all week.
Yeah.
It's something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast as we talk to both hop growers and brewers, the fact that a lot of these folks started out as home brewers who love to brew and that's their passion, or, you know, farmers who love to farm and that's their passion, but they love beer too and say, hey, why can't I do both? And then you find out there are things like taxes and zoning yeah. and insurance and payroll and all. You spend 90% of your time doing things that have nothing to do with the beer because it's business.
Yeah, and I think that our original kind of time frame, we'd obviously, you know, when we first started doing this, we're hoping to open at some time in 2018. We didn't actually open until March of 2019, but we had, you know, a full 11-month period of build out where we were able to do a lot of that stuff. The permitting was actually pretty, you know, it wasn't that stressful. It takes a while, right, just to get through the Fed process and the state of Connecticut process and the zoning in the town, because we had to change. There was no zoning laws in Newtown for a brewery. So before we could even really sign our lease, we had to make sure that they were willing to do that, kind of in conjunction with then trying to get a federal license. So that part of the process was, it didn't take as long as I thought maybe it would be, but it was certainly, you know, a big chunk of those first four or five months.
And how has that been in terms of Newtown? I know that, I mean, I've been here for 20 years. This is the only brewery in town.
Yeah.
Now, there are breweries 5 or 10 minutes away in various different directions. But I know locally, that was a big deal. People have been excited and waiting and couldn't get in here on opening weekend. What's that been like being the unique business in this town?
Well, first, two parts of that. First is like our actual interaction with the town. And they have been, you know, great. They kind of helped us right away before we moved in here with getting the updated zoning laws to allow for a brewery. It really wasn't much legwork on our end. You know, we had to go give a presentation and talk about what we were going to do so they could feel comfortable with it. But I mean, they and Crystal over at the Economic Development Office in town have been super great for us outside of the town. The people in town, I think the reception has been amazing too. I can't tell you how many people that we've seen come in here like multiple times during the week. You know, opening weekend, you get people from out of town, right? It's a new brewery. People are traveling from all across the state. But there's certainly like we've met some awesome people in these first 2 months that are from Newtown that are so pumped that we're here and that keep coming back because not only they love the beer, but they love a place where they can come hang out, you know, talk to the people behind the bar. And so it's been, I've got nothing but good things to say about this town.
Great. And in terms of the beers that you've got here, the mix in particular. So I know for me, you tend to go places sometimes and it's, you know, an IPA brewery only. You've got a really nice mix of, you know, you've got a porter, you've got a stout, you've got the wee heavy. So Frank, as the brewer, was that a very conscious decision when you guys went live that you did a little bit of everything? Or are these... I mean, no one likes everything. So I was going to say, are these your tastes? But these can't all be your tastes.
Yeah.
There have to be things on this menu that you're proud of, but you wouldn't necessarily drink on a regular basis yourself.
That's a tough one not to counter your thought. But I mean, really, I like all the beers, and I do drink a lot of beers. I mean, I drink the Spectrum. We were talking earlier, we're also getting our own cider license so we can make our own cider. Not a lot of breweries will go out of their way to make their own cider, but I do love a good cider. I think it's a great in-between beer that you can have. you know, great in-between drink between a beer. But everything that we have on tap here is definitely kind of something that I pushed for. Ryan's always been very open to it. You know, his father and everybody that's all co-owner have been very open to it. You know, you have to meet the demand for the IPAs and everything else that everybody is looking for. But I do take a perspective of trying to have an understanding of what do other people look for in a beer and what can I do to kind of bring a classic style that's maybe out there, present it to them, that makes it more appealing to them. Because we have a wee heavy with peanut butter on tap that most people have never had a wee heavy in their life. The fact that I added peanut butter to it without being heavy-handed on it has all of a sudden been one of our top-rated beers. So it's not something I'm, and personally, you know, to I guess to your question a little bit there, I don't like peanut butter in general. You know, I don't go out of my way for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but when I was thinking of a wee heavy and what would work well with that flavor profile, peanut butter was kind of the first thing that came to my mind, and we did some test batches on it. We loved it. I myself loved it, so we went forward with that. So we'll always have, and that's what I was saying earlier with the brand, we'll always have a diverse profile of, I would almost say eclectic beers of, you know, you wouldn't normally find. You'll get the beer that you're looking for. You'll get an IPA. We're going to have lagers. We're going to do the traditional styles that everyone's looking for. But, you know, we sell flights. We sell diversity. And that's kind of our hope, is that we always have things on there you haven't tried before.
Has anything surprised you about how well it's moved or how not so well it's moved in terms of the opening menu?
Yeah, I am actually surprised by how well it's moved, because Ryan was saying earlier, we were hoping to be open a little earlier. And a lot of these beers were made for more of a fall moving to winter lineup. We came out towards the end of winter, and some of the beers work well for the time period that's here. But a lot of them are definitely beers that you would expect to have during winter time. But even those beers, they're received well, and we see pretty good sales volumes on them also. So,
and as far as that lineup, I mean, you had a plan in place, obviously, when you went live. Did you make any pivots in terms of the next couple that came out? Because I believe Soak Up the Berries was your next one, mm-hmm. and then Uopone. Have you kind of twisted a bit based on other things that are selling, or are you pretty much going according to plan so far?
Yeah, so far we have not deviated from our plan. We haven't said, okay, this is selling, we need to put on more IPAs or anything like that. IPAs are selling really well, but actually Soak Up the Berries was a test batch that we did quickly. We didn't even get it all the way to carbonation and kegging. We just liked the flavor from it, based off of the brew session and the first edition in the primary fermentation. And we went right to production with that one. And it's been a really big top seller for us. It's actually probably going to run out of production before I can get it back on tap. So that might just be because we have so many winterized beers, and that's a good warmer weather beer. But
people are dying for the spring.
People are dying for it. They just want it to be yes. here. So they're sucking that one down. But yeah, we're trying hard to kind of stick to ourselves, and you know, we're building a brand. Part of that brand is the beers that we produce. So we, you know, we don't want to get kind of washed down by chasing too much of what you would
see. And I'm going to speak for Frank here a little bit. I remember something he said to me when we were kind of building out the original lineup almost a year ago, maybe 10 months last summer. But it was kind of something along the lines of, like, you know, we want to have a beer on tap that anybody who walks in here can like. And whether that's, you know, your wit beer or the darker wee heavy or a stout, you know, not having 10 IPAs on tap. Well, I would love to drink 10 IPAs. I'm an IPA. I love IPAs. But there's been a lot of people who come in that are beer drinkers that don't like IPAs and are like thankful that we have 8 other options for them to drink. Mm-hmm. So that was something that, you know, he was kind of like a non-starter for him when this whole thing started.
It's definitely a balance issue. And there are folks, to your point, who will walk in and say, flight me some IPAs. And that is the trend, and it's been popular for a long time. And I love IPAs as well. I'm a porter guy. That's what I go toward. And having the porter and the wee heavy and the stout, that's even though it's not winter, I'm thrilled to have it there. So, yeah, I mean, mix being so important and not wanting to alienate anyone who walks in and says, hey, there's really nothing that I'm finding there that's in my taste. And the other nice part of that is, to your point about the wee heavy, most people have never seen a wee heavy. So they walk in and say, huh, that's different. And Ryan will attest to the fact that I will stand at the bar and say to people, have you tried the wee heavy? Have you tried the wee heavy? One of you mentioned family earlier, and I know. So what is the engagement from your respective families? And is this an all in, everyone's involved type of situation?
Yeah. So there's basically three main owners, myself, Frank, and my dad, who had owned a restaurant for, a decade and a half over in Waterbury. But even just beyond the ownership, like Frank's dad came and built this drink rail that separates our brewery from the tap room. My father-in-law built the bar. When we're bartending most weekends, I'll be here with like my mom and my wife and my dad and Frank's wife. So, the three of us, like Frank and I, aren't family, but the whole group is just, and my brother-in-law built the front door. So the whole process is, a little bit of us trying to do things on our own and roping in people that will help us. And a little bit of just, so you could call it a little bit of a family affair.
Very nice. So we talked about Newtown for a little bit, and to go back to that, there's a collaborative side of brewing, especially lately. You see so many of these breweries working with each other or working with local vendors doing other things. The reason James isn't with us tonight, my partner, is that he's out in Wisconsin doing a press release for something called Common Thread, which is a Wisconsin-wide annual brewing engagement through a whole bunch of breweries. I know that you guys have jumped right in to be involved in the community, so I'd love to hear some more about not only the things you're doing, but what from a business perspective, what does that get for you? I mean, certainly there's a aspect of wanting to be involved, but there's also a marketing side of all that, and there's a relationship side of all that. So I'm curious to hear how that's all going and who you're working with.
Well, I would start off by saying, part of our core fundamental value was not just giving back to the community and using local. But that being said, you can't say yes to everybody either. We're trying to balance right now. We're a new business in town, right? So there's a lot of people that have reached out for, not even donations or free beer and things like that. So we tried to pick a couple things that was, essential to, not just our business, but our core beliefs. So some of that was wildlife and outdoor stuff, local, some with an emphasis on other local charities. So we've kind of dealing with it as they come in. I don't think.
I did a poetry event for a town organization recently when, they reached out, said, would somebody speak at the poetry event? And I raised my hand for that. I thought it was a great thing to do. We have had a lot of great support from the surrounding breweries as well. They've been even out to I know the head brewer at Flagship Brewery on Staten Island. He's even looked at some of our business plans and supported us and said, here's what you're going to do. Black Hog's been a big support. The Black Hog guys that live in the area come in all the time. They bring us beer. They hang out. The Broken Symmetry guys over in Bethel have been great for us as well. We actually just contracted a beer with them recently because they're only a 5-barrel, so we can help them out there. So we've had a lot of support, not only just from the local community. Like Ryan said earlier, we didn't have to do too much to push that zoning board. The community was doing it for us, and then all the local breweries around us have really been very supportive of having another one in the area. Voracious has been very supportive.
I think
as
that's
well.
Kind of a cultural thing, at least for us. We're here because we love beer, we love running our own business, and we want to be here and we're happy. And at least where I came from in the finance world, it was a lot of cover your own ass and people weren't that nice to each other. And almost every single brewery that we have been in contact with has been, how can we help you? Somebody helped us get there. We're going to pay it forward. And that's kind of really cool to see. Obviously it's because they, I'm not saying they're all nice people, but for the most part, they're here, they're doing something they love. And they're part of our business plan going back to the whole business was, we don't want to take over the world with cans and be the biggest brewery ever. We want to be, keep our costs down, be a local tap room where people from Newtown can come. there's no reason why, if you can't keep your, you know, costs at a reasonable level and make good beer, that, you know, each town can't have it. Like, each town has 40 restaurants. They can have one or two or three breweries, not unless they're all not trying to be cans in every liquor store in every all 50 states. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where we our business plan was. And yeah, the community's been really cool.
And I know you're getting some of your malt locally.
Yeah. Yeah, we so actually the first we've done some test batches with Thrall because they were fantastic. They came and just dropped off some malt one day, like, here, go ahead and test it out. So Thrall malt was great. We're going to be doing some beer with their malt as well. But right around the corner from us in Bethel, they is a maltster open up called Rooster Malt, and he's coming down a nice sensory class with me. He has we bought some malt, and we did our Imperial Coffee Stout with him. You know, he came in a pinch when we just decided on a whim. We're like, oh, we're going to do an Imperial Coffee Stout. So we were able to get that malt really quickly, and it's great malt. So we are looking for ways to use them as we're building our business. You know, things are we're building plans to do the beer production more smoothly. So we're hoping to use them more regularly. But there's a lot of great hop contractors in the state as well that we know that we haven't had a chance to use yet. But wherever we can use what's going to make our product good and have some of that collaboration and be supportive of the smaller communities that are here, that's what we're doing. I mean, we even, that's the same thing. Most breweries do it. We donate our grain to local farmers. Whatever we can do to make that work, that's what we try to do.
And it's not just the malt. I mean, we met a local lady in town who does like, you know, spices for a lot of the local restaurants. We've used her a lot. And then you know, a local new business down the street called BD Provisions that sells like wholesale you know, bulk goods, whether it's all sustainable, zero waste, whether it's coffee or, you know, we sell their snacks behind the bar. We actually use one of their coffees in that same Imperial Stout. So that's kind of a Connecticut grown and coffee stout, if you will. So yeah, we're just, you know, you can't do it all 100%, but we're trying to, you know, work it in here and there where we can.
And Frank, you made an important comment before, which is that, you know, as long as it makes our stuff good, and that's a tricky balancing act because you want to be local, but you need to be cost conscious, and very often local is not the cheapest alternative. And you also want to be quality conscious because at the end of the day, the product has your name on it. So that's a tricky three-pronged balancing act that you need to maintain. And you learn that over time as you source from different people. There's also the volume aspect. You know, can you actually get all of your ingredients in enough volume to satisfy your needs just from the surrounding area? And usually the answer to that
right.
is no.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why we started, you know, we're trying to selectively do it where we can. Obviously, it wasn't feasible for us to open 12 or 11 new beers all from, you know, a maltster in town that doesn't have the capacity for it, right? So we're trying to, you know, he actually opened probably around the same time as us, actually.
Yeah,
so it's, you know,
us,
it's
yep.
a kind of an organic, tried them for one beer. We love the way it turned out. So now we're going to figure out ways to work more with each other, and it kind of grows from there.
So what's next? What's coming up in terms of, from an expansion perspective or new beers? Where do you go? You know, you mentioned cider briefly, that you're going to move
right.
into that.
Yeah, we already have, we technically have a winery license now as far as the federal government's concerned. So we're working through the state on getting that final approval, but we'll be doing cider here. Hopefully by fall we'll figure that. That's another local one that we would love. We're starting to reach out to farms. We want to get a local cider base if we can get it. Make that our regular as well. From a beer standard profile for what we're looking at, that coffee stout we did, we decided to split batch it, and we're bourbon barrel aging some of them. So that's the first barrel aged beer that we're doing. Now it's getting into summertime. We were just having a meeting earlier and just talking about how do we kind of pivot the tap lines and what do we do to get them turning over more quickly and what kind of profiles we want to look at. So we are bringing out some more summer flavors. We have new iteration of a barbecue beer that we did. It's actually kind of more of the closer to the original profile that we're looking for. Another barbecue amber ale coming out this summer. We have lager coming out next weekend, Cinco de Mayo weekend.
May 2nd.
May 2nd.
Heard it here first.
Heard it here first. And then we have we have a smash. I do like the idea of having a smash program, and I like pale ales, and I think a smash is a great pale ale that you can do. So we've had our first smash been on since we're on tap, and we're going to have our new smash coming out soon as well. That'll probably be on very shortly. Maybe we'll have to figure out the actual launch date for that. I can't give you here at first information. But we are also, I mean, I have test batches for all kinds of stuff. It's kind of, we have a Gruet test batch that I'm going on, and I haven't seen a lot of breweries come out with non-hopped beers before. We try every, I mean, that's a big thing that, again, Susie Spice, local spice person, helped us find a lot of spices I couldn't find anywhere
else.
But
this is a podcast about hops, so we should skip that beer.
That's interesting stuff, right? From a brewing perspective, going away from hops, and that I think that's fascinating. So
yeah, I mean, you know, we have several of the styles that we have on tap that the hops definitely not the forefront. They're always there in everything that we have right now, but I'm a fan of trying new things all the time, and you know, I know a lot of people have not even heard the term Gruet. So if I could put a Gruet on tap without too much push from some internal partner conversations, I'll do it. But, you know, a big thing is, like, it's a local education. We would love to have the regulars, like, try new things and say, oh, wow, never thought of that, and have them suggest some ideas. That's another thing that we've, for future thoughts, talked about trying to push for a homebrew club here. You know, you get so many good perspectives from people who are making their own beer and thinking about beer all the time. That's my primary background, so... but as far as, I don't know if you want to take the future plans, I know we're pushing for our patio build.
Yeah, we got a couple things. We're working with the town now to try to get a patio outside and like a little rec area for some cornhole. We actually just kind of met and got some of our keg prices uploaded to the state, so we're going to be going out to some local, actually not local restaurants, some restaurants in the surrounding towns in the first week of May here. And the kind of thinking is we wanted to almost surround Newtown where we were and get some beers out to places where people might not have heard of us yet. And not, you know, our goal in the future is of course to be on tap at establishments in Newtown, but certainly not you know, in this first year. And then other than that, Frank said we got the cider build out. It's going to take a little bit of time. And, you know, we have an extra garage in the back that's about 1,600 square feet that has a big walk-in in it right now. But the other two-thirds of it are kind of open space. And do we make that a barreling program area, or do we make it a private event center? So we've got, you know, we've got some things to kind of pivot towards and, you know, kind of see where this summer goes. But the forefront on my mind is this patio, because the good weather's coming and we need some outdoor space.
So, you know, a lot of ideas, a lot of expansion thoughts and different things you want to do. When you opened the doors 8 weeks ago, were there thresholds you were looking for? Well, if we do this well, we can do this. If we do this well, we can do this and we can do this.
Yes and no. So we kind of were in a fortunate spot overall, because our capital raise was all kind of through family and friends, and we didn't have to take on a ton of debt. We have a little bit, but it's all, like, you know, with some personal loans from some friends and family, and actually an owner. So we don't have a huge debt burden. We certainly had some goals kind of in the business plan for monthly sales. And, you know, this, the bare bone, and actually Frank, going back to some of the breweries that helped us out along the way, we got some of those figures from them. Like, this is what we can expect on a Wednesday or a Thursday night. And this is what you can expect, you know, almost kind of worst case scenario on a weekend. And so we've blown through those. I think it's more of, the first month was crazy. We didn't hire anybody. It was just the owners. So we didn't really have time that first month to, like, kind of debrief and say, what are we going to do next? Because we were here 7 days a week. But yes, the short answer is yes. We've hit kind of the goal the first month. Obviously, we're still in April here, but it wasn't anything along the lines of, like, if we hit X number of dollars, we buy a new fermenter. It's never going to be like that. It's like, okay, this is what we have. This is where our kind of account balance is. What are the pros and cons of buying a new fermenter or upgrading the existing brew house? Is that maybe more important than buying a new fermenter? And And it's got to change every month.
Yeah. Or fix the steam lines.
Exactly.
The constant steam fixing.
I want to get back to mix for just a second because, as we talked about, you've got a nice variety going on there. Do you see that flowing differently from a flight perspective versus a pint perspective?
Yes, but like I said, it's still we're still so new that we really only have opening month data. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, I have a little bit from April, but and I don't really know how much we can weigh on those metrics because a lot of people were coming in and, you know, there'd be a couple of people like, a couple would come in and they'd get all 12 in a flight. For the two of them to share. Because that's, you know, we're a new brewery. They kind of want to try everything. So I think that's something that we're going to lean on much more after this kind of first month and see, hey, X number of people are buying this flight. Because, you know, one of the things we did in our POS system was we broke down buying a beer versus buying a flight. We key in actually all individual four beers in the flight just so we can see what sells. So, we'll definitely try to figure out, oh, this people are always ordering this beer in a flight and never buying it in pints. Or if this beer is sold in a flight almost 50% of the time after that, they come back and get, you know, a 13 or a 16 ounce pour. But I don't think there's much stock that we can take in it from month one, just because we were, every weekend was kind of a mob scene in here. And I think people were just excited to try all the beers. So it might not be a good barometer for what's going to go forward.
That's very fair. That's very fair. It'll take time. So Frank, a question for you, is there a style or a type of beer that you will never brew?
Absolutely not.
You'll try anything.
I'm probably one of the very few brewers that will ever say that. I actually have conversations with brewers all the time about this. And they're always like, never. I'm like, why not? Give it a shot. It's, you know, and the thing is, the thing that I like about it is just because it's a specific style that's out there doesn't mean you can't make one you like. That's why we have a 10-gallon Sabgo test system. We bought that as one of the things. We're going to test things. I'm not going to go right away with a – I know some breweries will always go straight up to their main system with a batch, and I've done that before. I'm not afraid to do it. But for something that I maybe have not tried for and I want to kind of dial in a little bit, I'll do some test batches on it and see where I want to get it to.
Then we get some employee kegs out of it.
Yeah, and get a little bit of that
there you go.
Goodness. If it's
no, – nothing so bad. So there may be stuff that you won't serve to your customers, but you'll keep it for yourself.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely stuff I won't serve to the customers, but...
Well, we can't serve it to the customers until we get the keg collars.
Yeah. But yeah, from a perspective, I say right now, any beer style I've ever heard of, there's not something I wouldn't do. The only thing I might say is if, let's say, some Glitter Sparkles beer is going to ruin a tap line, we got to talk about if we're willing to invest in a new tap line. But yeah, I mean, there, you know, anybody who walks in here, like Ryan said earlier, you know, if I made that statement... Great that he remembered it. Anybody who walks in here, if someone likes Glitter Sparkle beer, why not give them a Glitter Sparkle beer? You know, we don't have to have it on for, you know, it's not a dedicated tap line, but can definitely go with it. So,
we have a game that we play with our brewers, and it's called Beer the Name.
Okay.
As opposed to Name the Beer. So you're brewing, you put something together and say, I've got to name this beer. But we're going to go in the other direction. I'm going to give you some ridiculous names. And some of them are movie quotes. Some of them are just things I saw on a road sign somewhere. And I want you to tell me if that was written up there in chalk on the board, what, and that came from your brain back there, what that beer would be. And bonus points if you can name where the quotes came
boy.
From. So the first beer we're putting on the chalkboard is There Can Be Only One.
Oh, I mean, that's, I'm a huge Highlander fan and Queen at the same time. So right there, my brain's at both those things. So let's see. I mean, to talk about a Glitter Sparkle beer already, that's the first thing in my mind. I don't think that's what I would do. There could be only one in the opposite way of my mind goes, a smash. You're running my mind all over the place with that one. I think I would make so Connor McLeod was Scottish. I think I would have to go back to the Wee Heavies on there, and unless it's Duncan McLeod, whichever one you want to do, the series and the movie. I would definitely go with some Scottish style ale, definitely in the Wee Heavy category, because it's, you know, it's the only one you're going to have, let's say. And maybe I would have to do something flowery on top of it. Maybe I would do some elderflower or something something that punches you in the face and a nod to that entire movie series because it's fantastic.
Oh, okay, so the next one I've got here, and for anyone who, the beautiful thing about podcasting, about having a, you know, a face and body for radio like I do, is they'll believe I read this in the gym. But the next beer is called Strengthen Your Core.
All right. Well, that's definitely going to be a crushable, sessionable beer. I would have to say, like, you know, a really nice, clean Pilsner on that one. I would do that.
All right. We've got another movie quote here. Let's see. This one a little more obscure. I'll have what she's having.
Okay. That's When Harry Met Sally. Am I getting the points here? Yes. Well, geez, that's got to be a nod to New York delis, and I right there I go with rye bread, so I would do some type of rye pale ale with make it a little feminine, or I guess orgasmic, if you would say. It's definitely gonna be a rye pale ale. I think I would want to put something in it. It sounds weird, but maybe like rose water or rose petals or something. I don't know. I'd have to try it. That's why I have the test pilot system. Get too strong with that stuff.
I like the rye deli connection. That's it's tenuous, but it works in context. It absolutely does. So here's one completely out in left field. Another movie quote. One word beer name. Inconceivable.
Okay, that is also from The Princess Bride. Let's see.
Who knew Frank was such a movie guy?
Oh, dude, come on. Basically, anything, any cultural reference before 2002, I'm okay with. Inconceivable. I'd have to do a nod to the Iocane powder there. I would probably do something like that's like a nice red ale with some honey in it. I don't know. I don't think they were drinking mead. They were drinking wine. Maybe you could do like some wine barrel aging on it or something. Because then, you know, coming out of all just like you said, left field. You got some honey in there. You get some wine. You got a red ale. Doesn't make much sense. But I think I'd go all over the place with that one.
Nice. Okay, last one. We'll go with a musical reference. Blinded by the Light.
Okay, that's gotta be a super bright beer. I mean, I haven't done them yet, but that would be a beer style that is a contentious style too. Whereas your question earlier, that might be a good beer for a Brut IPA that I would try. I've had plenty of Brut IPAs, and they're supposed to be like, you know, pop and hit you in the mouth there, but it's definitely can make a nice beer out of that. So I'd probably do a Brut IPA with that.
And you got all my movie references.
Yeah, oh yeah, all day long.
Well, guys, I wish you the best of luck. As you know, I'm a fixture here, so I'm a little bit biased, but I love this place. And so far, you know, all seems to be going smoothly. Anything else that we didn't get to here in our conversation that you'd like to bring up, or you know, getting back to my initial question. I mean, you're new. The folks listening to this podcast, many of them are probably homebrewers who have dreams of one day opening a brewery. Any advice for those folks?
It's more work than you thought it was going to be, is probably what I would have to say. But if you pick good partners and good people to kind of work with you, it's fun. It's probably my biggest takeaway.
Yeah. I would say the same. I mean, and I didn't mention it earlier, but I started a family. My wife and I had a kid during this process. It was quicker to have a kid than it was to open a brewery. So, you know, you got the right team and the right people to do it. You work on each other and get something really that we're both proud of this. So,
guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
And, you know, post your comments on the website. Let's have some questions for these guys. And if you're even remotely in the New England area, stop by Reverie Brewing in Newtown, Connecticut.
Thank you.
Thank you.